everybody. The last 2 days we've been speaking about the prohibition of Malbin Pnei Chaveru Barabim, to publicly humiliate someone, and about how seriously the works of Chazal seem to take that prohibition. So one thing that is a very interesting issue that is discussed with that regard is, we mentioned yesterday in Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, HaMalbin Pnei Chaveru Barabim, if somebody is engaged in such an activity, so the Mishnah says, Alpha Pishi Yeshlo Tshuva Maisim Tovim, even if you spent a life doing all the right things, still, says the Mishnah, Ein lo chelek lo olam haba. One loses their chelek, their portion in the world to come. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes something that is a very obvious question. Let's say, God forbid, somebody was engaged in the act of actual murder. Somebody actually killed another person. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, as severe of an avera as that is, as horrible of an act as that might be, and there are such horrific consequences, you can't get the person back alive, yet we would say, you violated an avera, but you have the right to have a portion in the world to come. You have a chelek in olam haba. Nor do we find that ha-horeg es chavero ein lo chelek olam haba. You violated an avera. You're going to have to suffer terrible gehenna, but you still have a portion in the world to come. So why is it, asked Rabbeinu Yonah, if you have here something which is a derivative of ritzicha, where you have halbanas panim, which is in some way similar to the act of murder, why should the consequence be more severe? Why should we say that that person is ein lo chelek olam haba? It seems to be something that is not commensurate with the act. That is the question that Rabbeinu Yonah asks. And he suggests something which is amazing. He says that even if you have somebody who violates a very serious, a horrifying crime, something outrageous like murder itself, he says at some point the person will be able to consider and understand what it is that they have done. At some point when they get their senses back, they'll be able to do tshuva because they realize how horrific of an act they have been involved in. However, he says, when you have somebody who's involved and engaged in an activity where it's impossible for them to really understand the magnitude and the depth of the pain that they have caused by what it is that they've done, the profundity of the act that they've committed, in such a case, says Rabbeinu Yonah, the act of tshuva is not going to be as simple because they don't even fully understand how horrible the act was in the first place. And therefore, writes Rabbeinu Yonah, although it's true that if a person, God forbid, would be engaged in the act of murder itself, we would say, you have a portion in the world to come. That's because you have an opportunity at some point in life to do tshuva, because at some point in life you can understand how horrific of an act you've been involved in, and you can do tshuva accordingly. However, he says, "Hamalbim penei chaver barabim," we don't fully understand the depth of how painful that is. We don't fully internalize how horrific of an act that is, and therefore he says, the punishment for that is far worse, ein lo chelek l'olam haba, because a person will never really properly do tshuva in life for doing such an activity. It's an amazing and profound idea that Rabbeinu Yonah shares, and because of this Rabbeinu Yonah, we find a number of applications. One of them is the following. In the very end of Parshas Vayikra, the Torah talks about two different karbanos that have to be brought when one violates an avera. One is referred to as a karban chatas. One is referred to as a karban asham tali. What's the difference between a karban chatas and a karban asham tali? So the Gemara says that a chatas is brought when somebody violates an avera b'shogeg. For example, if I am mechal Shabbos, I didn't realize that I was involved in an activity that I shouldn't have done on Shabbos. We assume that I have to bring a karban chatas, and that will be able to get the tshuva process going on my behalf for the violation of Shabbos that I have violated. What about, what is an asham tali? So says the Gemara, if a person has two pieces of meat in front of them, I know that I ate one, I'm not sure which one I ate, and I know that one of them was certainly non-kosher meat. Now I'm just not sure which one was eaten. Both of them are gone now, somebody else took the other one away. So because of that, I'm not exactly sure whether or not I violated an avera. I have to bring what we refer to as an asham tali. It means I'm not sure if I violated something, it's talui, it's something that is unclear to me, and therefore I have to bring a carbon. However, the Gemara says, in Masechet Zvachim Daf Memches, there is a major difference between the carbon chatas and the carbon asham tali. When it comes to the carbon chatas, the Gemara says, you have to pay a minimal amount of money in order to bring that carbon. You have to buy an animal that's worth, the Gemara says, a bas danka, I don't know exactly how much that is, but a very small, a very limited amount of money, and with that you will be able to have a kapara by bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash. However, says the Gemara, if you violate something which warrants you to bring an asham tali, meaning you violate an avera where you're not certain whether or not you've even violated the avera in the first place, the Gemara says that is going to cost you. That is 48 times the amount of money that you have to pay should you have had to bring a karban chatas. And this is counterintuitive. This doesn't make any sense. Why does the Gemara say you have to pay this exorbitant amount of money when you're not even sure if you violated the Aveira, whereas somebody who certainly violated the Aveira has to bring even less. How can that be understood? Rabbeinu Yonah himself explains, similar to what he says in the other context between the difference in explaining Halbanas Panim versus Ritzicha, Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Meseches Brachos, that's the way to understand the difference between a Karban Chatas and an Asham Tali. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, the primary goal, the primary objective of bringing a Karban is not simply to go through the motion and have the Karban offered in the Beis HaMikdash and sprinkle the blood and eat the meat. That's not what it's for. He says the primary objective is La'orer es ha'adam b'tshuva, to arouse a person to feel a sense of responsibility, a sense of guilt for what it is that I have done. I have to have a conscience for the Avera that I have violated. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Yonah, if a person knows with certainty that they violated an Avera, they're going to have those feelings of regret at some point in their lives. And therefore, he says, there's no reason to make them pay so much money. They don't need the trigger, they don't need the motivation to be engaged in the act of tshuva. All we need for them to do is spend a little bit of money, bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, that will get the person into the process of thinking, and then they will feel guilty, and that will be sufficient for their tshuva process. However, writes Rabbeinu Yonah, if you have a person who violated an Avera, which is only an Asham Talui, meaning I'm not really sure, did I even violate the Avera in the first place? So, okay, I'll bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash on the off chance that maybe I did something wrong. But in the back of my mind, I say, I don't really need to do tshuva for this because I'm not even sure if I did anything wrong in the first place. And therefore, in a case like that, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you have to have a far more severe consequence for the person to be woken up. You need them to pay 48 times the amount in order for them to realize, to be alarmed, that there is a tshuva process that is necessary for what it is that they have done. Similar to what we said over here by the difference between a halbanas panim and ritzicha mamish, where we see that the punishment for the halbanas panim is far worse than the punishment for ritzicha itself. And based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rama writes in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim the following, Safik Aveira, when the Rama tries to explain and lay out for us how one has to do tshuva for the various transgressions that we may have violated throughout the year, says the Rama a very surprising statement. If someone has a Safik Aveira, if I'm not sure if I violated an Aveira, did I speak Lashon Hara about this person, did I not? Did I eat that non-kosher food? Did I do something that I'm not 100% sure whether or not I've even done it? Tzarech yoser tshuva mer aveira vado, says the Rama, you need even more of a profound tshuva for a safek aveira than you do for an aveira that you know that you have violated. Why? Because if a person knows that you violated an aveira, you're obviously going to have charata at some point. You're going to feel bad about it. However, says the Rama, if you're not even sure in the first place whether or not you violated the aveira, then he says a far more intense process of tshuva is necessary because it first takes you the first step to recognize that you've even done something wrong. And without doing that, you won't be able to ever come to a proper tshuva unless you have an awareness, unless you have a recognition that there's something wrong in the first place. So the Chafetz Chaim has a comment in a Sefer on Chumash. It's in Parshas Tazria where the Chafetz Chaim draws a interesting parallel to this from a pasuk in Parshas Tazria that's describing Negatzara. So as we know, the pasuk says, if somebody has one day a Negatzara on their body, they see some sort of white hair growing on their body, and they see all the conditions necessary for a tzaras to be a problem. So the Gemara tells us the whole description of what has to be done. They need to be sent out of the city. They need to live all by themselves. And that is the way that they're going to be able to have a re-entry upon the Negatzara going away after it is cured. So the striking statement that we find in Chumash is, if kulo hafach lavan, what if the person's entire body has turned white? Then says the pasuk, in that case, which is counterintuitive, taharu. Then in that case we say, you're not considered to be a mitzora at all. You don't have to go outside of the camp. So ask the Chafetz Chaim, does that make sense? If a person has a very small problem on their body and they just find a few hairs that are white, we send them out of the camp, we throw the book at them, we say, get out of here until we cure you. But if a person's entire body is filled with the white hair, if the whole body is inflicted with the tzaras, we would assume in a case like that, you should certainly have to go out for even a longer period of time. Why does the Torah say, taharu? Says the Chafetz Chaim so beautifully, he explains. Hine yadua ma'amaram, we know the Gemara says, the reason why a person is inflicted with tzaras is because of avon lashon hara. It's because a person spoke lashon hara. And therefore the Torah wants you to wake up, and God sends you a punishment which should remind you that you have to be more careful about lashon hara. You have to do tshuva for the way you spoke about others. Vihinei, Onesh HaMetzora, says the Chafetz Chaim. How do we punish a Metzora? Once they have that white spot on their body, we tell them, Badad Yeshe Mechutz LaMachana. You have to go live by yourself. You can't be with other people. Shelo Yiyu Tveim Yoshvim Mimo, says Rashi. You're not even allowed to sit with another Metzora. You have to sit by yourself in seclusion. No one else is allowed to be with you at all. V'yishivaso levado ve'en yishimo. By sitting alone and thinking about, having a chance to think about your life, it will bring a person to think about what they have done wrong. However, says the Chafetz Chaim, L'kol zeh zaku kametzora be'esha adayin lo hafach kol b'sar l'tzaras. This is something that a person needs when all they have on their body is a small sign of tzaras. So he says, you look at this thing and you say to yourself, eh, I can rationalize, I have all kinds of reasons to explain why this is not really tzaras. This is not really God's way of showing me anything. And therefore the Pasuk says, when you have a small tzaras that shows up on your body, we're going to send you outside of the encampment to make sure that you learn the lesson, to make sure that you will be humbled, to make sure that you have time to think and to contemplate your life. That is the only way to do it. However, says the Chafetz Chaim, a person whose entire body is kulo hafach lavan, do you think you're not going to be alarmed? Do you think you need a further lesson if your entire body is filled with tzaras? If there's not a single part of your body that you can run away from, that you can ignore? Says the Chafetz Chaim, when it's staring you at the face, that's good enough to teach a person a lesson. You know you've done something wrong. And the Chafetz Chaim said, no further action needs to be taken because the person will be able to learn the lesson on their own just by seeing what it is that went on their own body and in their own life. So there's an amazing vart that is said over in the name of Reb Simcha Bunami Pshischa. He says, why is it we find in the Dar Hamidbar, we find in the generation of the Jews that were leaving Mitzrayim, and now they were traveling with Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert, so we find something very strange. As we all know, there were two different averas that were violated, two highlighted averas that the Torah speaks about at great length. One was the Chet HaEgel, and one was, as we know, the Chet HaMeraglim. One was when they went to serve Avodah Zarah, they went and made for themselves an Egel Masecha, and the second one was the Chet HaMeraglim, when they sent the spies to Eretz Yisrael, and now they no longer were interested in entering the land. So, ask the Reb Simcha Bunami Pshischa, here you find something very unusual once again. If you look at the response that God has to the Chet HaEgel, what was it? Ultimately, Vayomer Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha. Ultimately, God says, I am able to find a place in my heart to forgive the Jewish people, even though they served Avodah Zarah. Vayas Lehem Egel Masecha. And they went and they served the other religion. They served something that they should certainly have not gotten involved with. God says, it's okay, I forgive them. All of a sudden it comes a little bit later, and they have an experience with the Meraglim. And the Jewish people lose faith, and they're not interested in going into Eretz Yisrael, and they're nervous about the trip. And God says, you know what, forget it. I'm not interested in forgiving the Jewish people. And he says that they are going to suffer for all eternity for this horrible avera. Ask Reb Simcha Bunami Pshischa, look at the two mistakes that they made. Which one was worse? Which one was more serious? Obviously, any intelligent person would say, the avera of the Chet HaEgel was far worse. You went and you served another religion? You went and you served Avodah Zarah? Of course that's worse than the Chet HaMeraglim. Well then why is it that now when it comes to ask for tshuva on the Chet HaEgel, God says he accepts the tshuva? When it comes to the Chet HaMeraglim, God says, nothing doing, I'm not willing to hear the tshuva process that the Jewish people are offering. Why do we find this seeming imbalance when it comes to the reaction and the response to both of these stories? Explains Reb Simcha Bunami Pshischa, the answer is very simple. The first mistake that the Jewish people made was the Chet HaEgel. And yes, it was a horrific, it was a horrible mistake. They should not have served Avodah Zarah. Everybody agrees to that. However, he says, can you imagine? They're watching Moshe Rabbeinu come down from the mountain. Moshe Rabbeinu is standing there with the luchos. They watch him smash them in front of their eyes. Do you think there's anybody in the Jewish people who had not been shaken up by that experience? And they really had a sincere feeling of tshuva at that time because of the way they were alarmed. So yes, they violated a horrible mistake, and they should never have gotten involved, and it was one of the cardinal mistakes that one can ever make in life. However, that is something that's excusable with a sincere tshuva. However, writes Reb Simcha Bunam, what happened the second time? Now they come to the second Avera, and they come and make a mistake of Chet HaMeraglim. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to them and says, how did you fall in again? How did you make a mistake? Chet HaMeraglim, how could it be? The Jewish people say, don't worry, God forgave us last time, nothing to worry about, we got away with it, everything's okay. Your tshuva is not sincere. If you're sitting and rationalizing and you're sitting and giving excuses about why it is that you can get around the problem that you've created, that's not something that you'll ever be able to have a full experience of tshuva for. And it's much more difficult to be forgiven for something like that because you don't even recognize the severity of the problem that you have created. And therefore, all of this is based on the comment of Rabbeinu Yonah in explaining why it is that when you violate the seemingly more serious avera of ritzicha mamish, we say a person still has the opportunity for tshuva and you can go to Olam Haba. Whereas when you violate the secondary prohibition, which is malbin pnei chaver v'rabin, why do we say ein lo chelek l'Olam Haba? Once again, says Rabbeinu Yonah, the reason why is because hamalbin pnei chaver v'rabin never fully understands the gravity of the mistake that they have made, the depth of the pain that they have caused to the person that they have humiliated. Whereas a rotzeach, at some point in his life, is going to realize, I've done something wrong, it's a horrific tragedy, it's a horrible consequence to the activity that I've been engaged in, and therefore I will do tshuva, which is commensurate with the act that I have been engaged in, which was a wrongful act. Rav Hanani ben Akash.